Well, I'm going to have a talk with the person who assigns speaking topics. Seems like I've been getting a lot of tough ones lately. Wait a minute. No, I chose this. That's right. Been working on it for several months, actually. It was kind of early, considering what's happening in the world today. So I've been delaying it. And as I did, it accumulated 7 pages of notes. I boiled it down to 5. So hopefully it won't be too long today, but it's a subject that is relevant to every one of us. Like it or not, believe it or not, you are going to be subject to this situation. It was back in about 1972 where I had just begun attending a few months before that, where I first heard the word in the context that I'm going to present it today. But the word was disillusioned. There was a fellow there that I had met, and suddenly he was no longer there. And I'm asking around, what happened to Mr. Kennedy? And the answer was, well, he'd become disillusioned. And to me at the time, that was strange because I was just coming into the truth more comprehensively, and it just blew me that anyone didn't share the same excitement and desire for God's truth that I was. But Mr. Kennedy had become somehow disillusioned. Don't know what it was over, whether it was a personnel matter or I don't know. But anyway, he was gone. And it kind of shocked me in a way because I first became aware how this can happen. And it can happen in places and in ways that we don't think can happen. But it can happen to anyone. To some degree, at some point, there's a good chance that you are going to become disillusioned. Now, first thing, we need to realize that to become disillusioned, you have to have an illusion in the first place. Illusion being something that you think is true that isn't. And when that reality comes to bear, we can become disillusioned if we don't know how to handle it or if we don't understand what's happening. Little story. There was a young lady from Niger who smiled as she rode out on a tiger. But they ended that ride with the lady inside and the smile on the face of the tiger. Now, we may enjoy the story, and you probably heard that before, but there's something we need to realize, that there came a point in time when this lady had that uh-oh moment. She thought she knew how this was going to play out, and it came to her that this isn't happening the way I thought it was going to happen. In other words, she was becoming disillusioned. That can happen to anyone in any situation. There's a number of ways where this kind of thing can happen to us. Words of wisdom from Shakespeare, where he said, "All the world's a stage, and all the men and women in it merely players." Very true, actually. We're living in an environment that is strongly comparable to theater. It's being staged. What's being presented to us? The situations that are being described to us, a lot of it is just theater. It's not real at all. Our media, and not just here in this country, but in the whole world, our media is more into manufacturing news than reporting it. I'm sure we've noticed that. People accept on blind faith, not exercising their senses of discernment. In Hebrews 5:14, we are admonished, and this is something that we should not and must not overlook in our awareness of what's going on around us. Hebrews 5:14. But strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, and strong meat being the blunt, uncompromised truth. Strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. How many people in this world are doing that? Who are exercising their senses of discernment? God tells us that we ought to be wise as serpents, though harmless as dove, wise as serpents. And that requires that we use our mental and cognitive faculties correctly. The older we get, the more we realize that that is increasingly the case. Our world is not structured around truth. Many of the perceptions, many of the pictures presented to us, much of what appears on our television screens, those perceptions are illusional. Christ told us the truth shall make you free. But we have to ask, free of what? What is the nature of that enslavement? Illusions can be countered only by the truth. We become free in our realm of perceptions. We become free in our minds, not enslaved to things that are illusional and not true. Truth is the mechanism of release from the grip of mental entrapment. Truth works primarily in our minds. It's our minds that needs to be structured with the truth, not the least of which is the truth of God's Word. We have to ask ourselves, what is going on in our minds? A lot of times we can just drift along day to day and not even think about it. What's going on? What are we thinking about? What provides us the information that we have oriented our thinking to? Our expectations can be shaped by the cultural environment, which is, unfortunately, mass information these days. We are living in a world that is excluded from information about what's really going on. There's a verse in Proverbs 13, and I first heard this verse, and at the time it struck me that I remember it to this day. But it was Art McCaro in a Bible study back east. He brought up this verse, Proverbs 13:12, and it sums up this subject, I think, in a poignant way. 13:12. Where it says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. But where the desire comes, it is a tree of life. When things don't happen the way we want them to happen, when we don't receive the expectations that we have, when it doesn't work out, we can become heartsick. Disillusionment can be described as a heartsick condition, a psychological malaise, if you want. Disillusionment is a close relative of depression. And it has to do with our personal expectations, the hoped-for goals that we might have, the outcomes that we would like to see, all of them deferred. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. Becoming disheartened is a form of disillusionment. And disillusionment is closely related to a state of mind known as depression. not necessarily actual depression, but disillusionment can happen to anyone. And disillusionment can lead to despair. Despair is the realm where it can become dangerous. Those that have studied the mind have categorized basically two situations here. There is what they call manic depression, and there is another that is called delusional depression. These are from mind studies. One is a malfunction of the brain, which we can't really do much about. It's just how people are wired, to some degree abnormally oriented. The other is a malfunction of the psyche. And that one we can do something about. Delusional depression. Can we identify disillusionment as psychological malfunction? Because it can be. Some people are naturally resistant to depressive thoughts. Not everyone is, but some are. People that we know as positive types. Clueless people are wide open to various forms of disillusionment. Cluelessness can be a choice, sad to say. There are some people who just don't believe. Or people believe what they want to believe. We've encountered that. We're all living in a culture of illusion. Shakespeare's stage. That illusion is being detached from full reality. A good Christian mustn't remain clueless, because it puts the risk of becoming disillusioned too high. Mark Twain observed that it's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. Does that ring true? We get into that area that we call counterintuitive. Ron Dart used to use that term a lot. Didn't know what he meant at first, but after a while, counterintuitive is when things are different than what we expected they were. Intuitively, we can say this or that is true. And then reality comes to bear. Our intuitions can be oriented to what facts we've accepted. What facts have we accepted? What things have we been told that we accepted as facts? Chances are, there's going to come a point in time when we're going to realize that some of those facts weren't really facts. And then what happens? We can, to some degree, become disillusioned. The question is, on what plane of consciousness do we operate? Are we just floating along, not thinking about anything? How is our mind structured? Are we structured positively or negatively? Because there's different kinds of people. I'm sure we've encountered people that we would regard as negatively oriented or positively oriented. Those that have studied this subject have noticed that in the brain there is a function that they call gating. And it surprises me how this compares to electronics. If you're familiar with electronics, whether a vacuum tube or a transistor, when you put a trickle charge into the side of this, the electron flow in any one of these devices, something happens. It either amplifies the flow or restricts the flow. It has a positive or a negative feedback effect, is what they call. But this function called gating enables the brain to select which stimuli to pay attention to. If successive neurons dampen the signal fades away. If they amplify it, the brain attends more closely. A popular theory of depression holds that the condition has something to do with gating. In depressive patients, neurons may be failing to dampen specific signals, therefore inducing the brain to orient unnecessarily on negative thoughts. A depressive brain, according to this theory, is failing to properly distinguish between salient and irrelevant stimuli. Irrelevant meaning things that are illusionary, less significant in reality. What about the area of spiritual thoughts, as opposed to carnal thoughts? Question is, what effect does the Spirit of God have? The Apostle Paul must have recognized this condition because he spoke of it positively. In Philippians 4, beginning about verse 8, Paul addressed this very subject, where he explained how we should orient our thinking, because it's an area where we have a certain amount of control. We can control how we think and how we process. Philippians 4, and I'll just read his conclusion to this particular narrative that he's giving us. Finally, brethren, verse 8, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Paul is encouraging a positive way of thinking. And it includes what we've let into our minds as informational sources, but it also includes the sense of discernment to draw out positive aspects of anything, and by implication, to blank out the negative that have no value to us. Now, sometimes there are negative things that do have value to us that we need to be aware of. But the point is, Paul's point is, thinking positive thoughts. In this world, we can many times experience what is called mental whiplash. And that could be if we're not processing information appropriately. We all of us love to go back to simpler times. We can think of how it was in the past. Boy, wasn't life good back then, as compared to the chaos that we see today. Well, tribulation is coming, and that chaos is going to amplify. We need to know how to deal with it. There was that popular song back in the 60s. Those were the days, my friends. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. Didn't happen, did it? But it's fun to think like that. We all have this internal desire to find a safe zone where we can withdraw and take cover from the stuff being thrown around. Problem is, we can't remain ignorant of realities and be on an unshakable foundation. It's the unshakable foundation that has to be our basis for surviving. Mental isolation works only so long as it can be maintained. But it can't be maintained forever. Living in a state of relative unawareness isn't healthy. It leaves us vulnerable. Why? Primary reason? Satan deceives the whole world. We can read that in Revelation 12:9. Satan deceives the whole world. That is the structure of the informational sources that we live in today. Truth will eventually come to bear. Don't know when exactly. Certainly, when Christ returns, truth will come to bear. It's going to become a factor in everyone's thinking. But those of us who know the truth, today we have to come to grips with it. Satan seeks to break the bonds between us, personally and internally and externally. Internally would be to separate us from the truth. Externally, we're living in a world like we've never seen. What the Bible describes as unprecedented troubles. People are going to become disoriented when they're routed out of their comfort zone with contrary facts. It's something we can expect. We have been starved of the usual information sources. A lot of them under the cover of political correctness and out of outright censorship. Why would anyone censor the truth? But there's a great desire to do that these days. The world is going to descend into darkness. The whole world did that in the 5th century. And certainly more recently in World War II. The world loves darkness. Matthew 6:22. Darkness is not the realm of the people of light. Matthew 6:22. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? It's talking about how we see things. How we see things. Do we see things with enlightenment? Are we people of the light? Or are we surrounded by the darkness that is in this world? We don't know what's coming next. But we need to be prepared to lose touch with everything that we've become oriented to, because this world is changing. We need to be identifying and getting to the issues that matter. So much of what we hear doesn't matter. We need to be people who will fight for the truth. So many are unconcerned toward its value. So many people have lost faith, and more are going to. Lost faith in all of our institutions. The media, the government, religion, academia, and even health. We've lost faith in our major institutions. They have been infiltrated by people of darkness. Disillusionment is a corridor lined with many doors. There's many ways that we can experience disillusionment. In Isaiah 66:4 and 2 Thessalonians 2:11, God says he will send strong delusion. And those people that become deluded, how easy is it going to be to dislodge them from their way of thinking? Almost impossible. But we're going to have to deal with that personally first, and eventually we're going to have to help the people who have accepted the delusion in which they live. Evil is deeply embedded in our society, so much so that they call evil good, and good evil. Isaiah 5:20 tells us about that. And we certainly have examples of that today. Question is, what sets up the condition of vulnerability to disillusionment? What do we do that makes us vulnerable. Well, poor mental health habits, for one. What informational environment do we place ourselves into? Remember, Pilate said, "What is truth?" Even in his day, you couldn't be sure of what the truth was. I love that segment in the movie Shooter. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but that senator from, where was it, Montana? He says, "The truth is what I say it is." He's not alone. I'm sorry. Many of our senators and government officials, the truth is what they say it is, whether it is or not. That's where our senses of discernment play in. We can become disillusioned with our assessment of ourselves or of others or of the information that we're being given, because we can't always know what the truth is. We have to have the sense that comes with the Spirit of God working with our minds to be able to sort out things that intellectually we might not be able to sort out. Our institutions, both religious and political and educational, have been infiltrated by evil players. Ephesians 6:12 tells us there are spiritual powers in high places. How much do we believe that? Ephesians 6:12. This is a reality. It's been a reality for a long time. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. We tend to see the physical representatives of these agendas. But we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. What effect do you think that has on the sources of information that we're being exposed to? Christ spoke of the blind that lead the blind. There are none so blind as those who will not see. Matthew 15:14, if you want a reference there. There are all kinds of false flags that instill fear and confusion. And we can be affected by that if we're not being circumspect. We're told that we need to be circumspect. When we find things that are inaccurate, there's places that some people just will not go because they're afraid of where it's going to lead them. People doing good will be smeared by those doing evil. And the good people are bewildered by that. How can someone say that something that is good is evil? We can be disillusioned with our belief system, with our organizations, with our government, with people, or with life in general. Disillusionment can come from many, many sources. Imagine situations that we thought were real, and then reality comes and tramples those into the dust. And we would ask ourselves, why didn't I know that up front? Why didn't I know? Well, we need to be paying attention. The Apostle Paul is in some places seen as a philosophic psychologist. We read that verse in Philippians 4:8 where he tells us to think on the positive side. Part of deflecting disillusionment is activating our subconscious. God always needs to be in the background of our thoughts. We need to seek direction, not just accept it from what we're told. We need to develop the mind of Christ. In 1 John 4, verse 1, he tells us we need to try the spirits whether they are of God. Those spirits being talked about there are the same ones that we read of, the principalities and power that rule in this evil world. There is a power, a spirit of lawlessness that is going to be revealed in the end time, and we can perhaps speculate that that's already beginning to happen. Spirits can work on our minds, and we need to be aware of them. In Galatians 5:9, Paul tells us, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. We tend to think of that as sin. But the leaven of misinformation can apply also. When we draw in misinformation, when we make something that isn't true, true in our mind, it can leaven the whole lump of our thinking as well. There's a broader application of that. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Leaven can set up a state known as cognitive dissonance. There's that term that Ron Dart used. Counterintuitive. Cognitive dissonance. A prime example is the phenomenon of cognitive dissonance, where so-called rational deliberation and good scientific evidence fail to overcome a stronger feeling that a contrary opinion is correct. Imagine a brain in which the visceral sense of knowing is disconnected from centers of our logical thought, yet stuck on a given idea. No matter what contrary evidence or line of reasoning is presented that the idea is wrong, the brain will continue to generate a feeling of rightness. Now consider that in the context of a religious belief system, because so many people in the world would find the truth of the Bible cognitive dissonance to their belief structure. And that's why we have so many problems with those people that become familiar with our teachings. Compared to the normal religious belief system, what we teach is somewhat cognitively dissonant. People become disoriented when the things that they thought were true and real prove otherwise. Peter, in 1 Peter 4:12, tells us, don't think it strange when you experience fiery trials. And many of those fiery trials are going to be in our mental thought processes. When people have been of both persuasions and figured out what is right, actually, that person is in a more stable mindset. Balanced thinking comes from weighing all reasonable possibilities. We need to identify what factors in our life are our anchor points. To what are we anchored? What is the focal point of our understanding, our relationships, our purpose? It needs to be seeking God's kingdom. Paul in Colossians 3:16 tells us, singing hymns is an important factor in maintaining a positive way of thinking. How many times does a hymn come to mind and you rehearse it in your mind over and over? Very positive thing. Hymns have a message. Many of them are taken directly from God's Word. But they're put together in a way that has a positive effect on our thinking. Being informed is an important defense position. We need to be circumspect. In Ephesians 5, verse 15, we're told that. Start in verse 14. Wherefore he says, awake, you that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because these days are evil. We need to be circumspect at all times. That means looking around. Know what's going on around. Weigh it through in your mind. Come to understand. Now, something else, and this is looking forward, but think about the people in the early millennial kingdom. People that have lived through this age into the next. Can you imagine the level of disillusionment that they are going to have? Think about all the people going to be resurrected after the 1,000 years. What is their psychological makeup going to be like? We're going to have to deal with that. So we should be dealing with it now, learning how to figure it out, learning what's true, learning what's right, so that we can help others, because it's going to happen. In Jeremiah 16:19, it tells us, and this will probably be the chant of those people that live on into the millennium, where it says, truly our fathers have inherited lies, vanity, and things wherein there is no profit. In other words, our fathers got it from their fathers. This goes back many generations. Bunch of worthless nonsense. Truly, our fathers have inherited lies. And obviously they believed them to be able to say that. Think about our contemporaries. How do we advise them? How do we inform them? Minds that are basically, for the present time, closed to the truth. God's Word describes us as watchmen on the wall. To be a good watchman on the wall, you need to know what's really going on. Do these terms ring a bell? You've heard them recently, if you're following the news. Do you know about gain-of-function research? Does Davos ring a bell? How about critical race theory? You familiar with those terms? They're all going to affect us very heavily in the near future. They're factors in what's going on today. Something else to realize, that as things get more and more troubled, Daniel 11:34 tells us that there's going to be people who cling to us with flatteries, not genuine, but they're going to recognize that we have something that they want. We need to be prepared for that. It's a reality that's coming. We need to have our head in the game. We need to stop being confused. We need to stop being tossed by every wind of doctrine or every wind of new news. We need to be weighing the things that are true, the things that matter. Becoming informed, using our senses of discernment, they are going to be so important. We also need to share with one another, because we all don't have the same interest area. We don't all have the same experiences. We don't all have been exposed to the same points of truth. So it's important that we share with one another what we know. We can't all research and assess everything. This is where the group think helps. And now Malachi 3, the concluding verses of the Old Testament, it praises those who speak often one with another. Well, speaking about what? This is where we realize the benefits of substantive fellowship. James 5:20 is a good place to conclude here, because James noticed something, and he spoke of it. I think it's here. There it is, James 5:20. And here's something here that I'm not sure that we've looked at in this manner. Verse 19, James 5. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he which converts the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. Now, is this talking about something who's sinning all the time? Or is this talking about someone who really doesn't understand the truth? And that failure to understand the truth is what leads them into a sinful circumstance. This is talking about the truth. It's right there in the middle of verse 19. The truth. We need the truth. Not just what somebody says it is, but what it really is. We need to employ God's Spirit to be able to understand and to discern what is true. I want to conclude with a little poem here by Rudyard Kipling. I'm sure you're familiar with it. You've probably heard it before. I'm going to paraphrase just a little bit, but I think it's very appropriate to this message. But Mr. Kipling wrote, "If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, yet not dealing in lies, or being hated, not giving way to hating. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to, broken, and stoop to build them back with time-worn tools. If you can walk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings and not lose the common touch, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And what's more, you'll be a child of God, my son."